The Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
An important day. All right, we'll give it a try.
It's the non-productive Star Wars Holiday Special, starring Longshot Ken, Big Papa Pete, and your host, Frank.
Oh, this is the most exciting time of the year.
Yay, the I can't wait to hear Bea Arthur's song.
I was just going to say, I'm upset. We didn't find out that special guest stars Bea Arthur and Harvey Korman were... Oh, wait. Never mind.
I'm sorry. Spoiler alert. Bea Arthur and Harvey Korman die.
By now, all of you have probably watched... what was that movie called again? Star Wars: The Force Awakens?
The Force Done Woke Up.
Yep, that's the one. We are going to do a in-depth, spoiler-riddled conversation about Star Wars.
All right, so first off, Han Solo... No. Yeah.
And we're going to do that.
So if y'all ain't seen the movie yet, no Christmas special for you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, no, that's...
Go see the movie and then listen to your Christmas special.
Yes, you listen to this thing after you've seen the movie. For those of you out there, we're probably going to have a few more guest appearances by the time this thing is done.
Yes.
But we're gonna just have it out. This is a major time for us geeks. This is a interesting... period to be a
it is an
dork.
Interesting time for the Republic.
Yeah. So
I'm sorry.
It's interesting that the Star Wars, it's been like 30 some odd years since, when was the original? 77. So that's like
almost 40 years.
Almost 40 years.
38 years.
Since that movie. Math. It's been more than a decade since the last prequel, right? It was...
Was it 2005? No. 2000. No, it was 2005. Yeah, because it was 99, 2002, and then 2005.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's been more than a decade since the last prequel came out. I think Star Wars has finally truly become multi-generational and multi-epoch. Like, it's weird how this film has made me feel like, all right, this is something... we have created for the generations.
It's about 30 years since we got a good Star Wars movie.
Huh. Right. Because the prequels were terrible. I don't think that's true. I think that's one of the things I found out before watching The Force Awakens, is that a lot of people are coming out of the closet as saying, they weren't that bad.
We had closet prequel fans.
Yeah.
Well, millennials, you know.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I...
We all need something to grow up with.
I enjoyed them as they were coming out because, new Star Wars.
Yeah, and there's always some fun stuff. So, like, Star Wars goes through a lot of periods. You get the initial Star Wars where it's just, like, excitement that this new thing is out. Mm-hmm. The 70s Star Wars of what the hell is this? When, like, articles from the time are like, what is this? Why are people... There's a puppet. There's people like this puppet. Like, they don't get any of it. It's so fun to read articles from the time. Then it becomes like a bona fide franchise, which we didn't really even have the concept for yet, where kids were playing with the toys and they were waiting for the next movie. And then we had that period of time, that dark time, when all we had was like role-playing games and like video games and things.
And novels and comic books. And
eventually the novels and the comics and all
that
kind
of
stuff.
If you wanted Star Wars, you had to read.
Yeah.
And that's only 20 years ago.
Right.
You know?
And then, of course, the big fanfare for the prequels. And then the weird kind of bubble bursts on that where like some people are like, enough is enough. And even like up until this movie came out, I've heard people going like, enough about Star Wars. But those people are now officially in the minority. They are the weird ones. And that is pretty damn impressive.
Well, I don't know.
Congratulations, nerds. We won.
Yeah. No, I beg to differ, actually. Because
Shut up, Jock.
When you think about it.
We won.
You know, everything was like, I don't know, growing up too, it was like, you're a Star Wars fan, you're a nerd, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
But look at the box office numbers for every single one of those movies. It wasn't just the nerds going out to see these
Absolutely
movies.
Absolutely true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There were
no
proto-hipsters going to see it, ironically.
You know, Not bad for a movie that Lucas said was designed for kids, because a lot of adults went to see all these movies.
Yeah, and a lot of the stories you hear about people who were young when they were brought out to see the original Star Wars movies, they talk about how their parents were into science fiction and there weren't many options for them.
Right.
So they're just excited about the science fiction
and
fantasy.
And let's not face the fact that Star Wars broke a lot of boundaries for sci-fi too, because, I mean, there was good sci-fi, but there wasn't a lot of good sci-fi.
Right, right.
You know, before Star Wars. Yeah.
Right. So we're going to focus our attention on The Force Awakens. I guess we should start off saying how we saw it. I saw it opening night, or the pre-opening night.
Yes.
And I saw it in standard 3D, which doesn't even make sense. I saw it in Disney, what is that, 3D? What the hell is Disney 3D. Proprietary 3D?
Real D?
Real D, I think that's what it's called. But not in the IMAX screen, which is what I kind of wanted, the IMAX 3D experience.
Well, that was how we saw it also.
Oh, you saw it in the standard 3D?
Standard 3D.
Okay. Standard 3D, yeah. Sounds weird. So I don't even know where to begin. It was an amazing film, in my opinion, and I think
Let's start from the beginning.
All right,
a very good place to start,
because
the opening scroll.
Before the opening scroll.
God, you're not going to harp on this.
I am, because being a fan and loving the series, I felt kind of empty when it opened up on the Lucasfilm logo very silently, and we didn't have any 20th Century Fox fanfare this go around.
He felt empty by it.
I did. I felt very empty by it.
I get the disturbing feeling that Ken is going to create his own fan cut when this comes out.
It's very
simple. He's just going to edit the Fox logo onto the beginning.
It's very possible. But let me ask you guys.
And the most disturbing thing is that if he can figure out a way to bootleg it and sell the bootlegs, he will rake in cash.
Right.
But let me ask you guys. I mean, whenever you hear that fanfare, that bump, 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 brrr, bump, bump, like, what's the first thing you think of?
Yeah, 20th Century Fox. I guess Star Wars does, like, is high in that, because I think movies stopped using it, right?
Even, like, the soundtrack incorporated that into it at one point.
Yeah, when they released the special edition soundtracks,
you know,
they all opened with a separate track for the Fox fanfare.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. So here's truth right now in your ears. I did not realize it was missing.
Really?
I didn't even know until afterwards when I heard people complaining on the internet.
Really?
I totally missed it.
Oh, no.
Understand
Ken's not alone?
yeah. There are other people. Well, hold on. It's entirely possible Ken has, like, fake accounts everywhere.
This
he just agrees with
do.
Himself.
I do.
But, yeah, I don't know how I missed that. That seems to be, like, a detail that I would have. I kept my eye open for certain things. I saw the long ago Galaxy Far Away. I was wondering if they would remove one of the longs.
I wouldn't have.
Not so long ago at a galaxy a little bit nearer.
I would have been better. I would have been okay if they just got rid of the Lucasfilm logo. If there was a way to put that fanfare in there.
Wow. All right. Make sure you got fanfare for Ken.
I wouldn't have really cared that it was gone, except, you know, there was someone loudly complaining about it next to me.
That's why you go see the movies alone. No. All right. So that is pretty big. I do enjoy my good old opening scroll. And one of my favorite things about this one, and actually broader than... just talking about everything frame by frame.
Can I guess?
Yes.
It made no mention of trade.
Trade
embargo. Ooh, negotiation.
But specifically, because I'm not going to be like just throwing shade on the prequels. It was incredibly simple. Like you can get the beats of the story very easily. Yeah. Some people will probably, and we'll get to this, will say that it was mirroring earlier stories, but it was very clear. I went to see it with a loved one who had never seen Star Wars before, and she totally, like, I asked her afterwards, and she was like, no, it's
clear
what's
going on. Gave her all the setup she needed.
Yeah, it gave you everything. Very basic. The premise is...
It went back to basics, yes.
A hero is missing, and the rebellion, and the... Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole deal is... It was sweet.
It's definitely the best way to do a film that is a continuation or a readaptation of an existing product, and that is to give people enough to understand this story that you're telling now,
right?
And but still leave enough room for fans of the pre-existing product to now have a richer understanding of what's going on.
Yeah, and I think they do a lot of throughout the film. You get a lot of great, like, visuals do a lot of storytelling in this, so that you can tell that the First Order is bad, not only because the First Order lands on this planet and executes all the villagers, but because they are faceless. They are all wearing masks, effectively, in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. They're very stark. They're in black and white for the most part. They are neither joyous or happy. There's only maybe one or two instances where you see a stormtrooper doing something comical, and that's not until later in the film.
Yeah.
Right? And they're never actually smiling and enjoying themselves like our heroes do.
But we can't
the mask kind of has that weird kind of mouth thing going on.
Right. So
it's always twisted into a Joker smile.
I feel like the opening scenes are the most powerful. I'm going to put Max von Sydow aside for a minute. But I feel like the opening scenes with Finn, the stormtrooper, in his helmet, that entire sequence with him panicking, and you could see him hyperventilating inside. Basically, he's miming at this point.
Can I? One thing that I did love visually, too, to be able to separate who he was from everybody else, the blood spatter on the face was just visually impressive and brilliant.
Yes.
Right, right. So there's the hyperventilating. You could see him like shaking his head no to the idea that he's going to be shooting these people that have done nothing and for no reason. The blood on his helmet as a comrade dies, although like later on he betrays his group and there's a little bit of weirdness there where he seems shocked to see somebody die, but at the same time he doesn't mind killing stormtroopers. Later on, you find that out. But I get the feeling like he knew that person. That stormtrooper who died put his hands on his helmet
and
for a
reason.
And we
got nothing to imply it. No backstory to know that. It just...
It was all in the mime and on the body language and what happens.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah, sure.
How would you feel if it came out later down the road that that other stormtrooper was his lover?
I think that would be interesting. I think that would be very interesting.
Yeah.
I think we've never gotten anything about stormtroopers in the original trilogy.
Yes, in their personal lives.
Right. Yeah. Nothing at all. In fact, if you look at early versions, like articles at the time,
Most people assumed they were robots.
Yeah. New York Times referred to them as robots. Mm-hmm. in one thing that we put on the fan club recently.
Back then, though, I mean, you really can... almost see it. Synthesized voice and they're all the same.
Absolutely. It makes perfect sense. I mean, obviously C-3PO was a robot and he's another guy in that movie.
Actually, it doesn't make any damn sense because in the first movie,
they're
obviously
outfits.
Knocked out and their uniforms are taken off and worn by
or
the main characters.
Just walking around in the hollowed out guts of the robot.
And they scream when they plummet to their deaths.
That's true.
Robots do that too, though.
The robots do scream.
Oh, that is true.
So we established that mouse droids, when threatened, roll away screaming.
I like the way mouse droid is the name of that droid. I've seen it referred to that as a lot of things.
And it appeared in this one.
Luke is a little short for a stormtrooper, which is significant if all stormtroopers are the same height because they're robots.
Or clones.
Right. So we don't really know much about stormtroopers at all in the original trilogy. And here we get a lot more detail.
We get new detail in a way with the stormtroopers.
Because the prequels established the clone troopers, right?
Which are mentioned at one point. It's a threat by Kylo Ren to the Tarkin-esque character he's friends with.
Hux,
He's like, you know, he threatened the
General
idea of
Hux
bringing
Weasley.
Of bringing clones back. But we also found out that...
Screw you and your Weasleys.
They're breeding children? Implanting
children?
Well,
not breeding. They're kidnapping them.
Well,
so,
yeah.
Let's
programming
kind of,
children.
Let's rope it in a little bit. So there's a couple of cool things about that. First of all, they don't disacknowledge the prequels, which are an interesting story, especially in like the TV shows. Like, the clone troopers are characters with things going on in their backstories. It's interesting that the Empire has options, a couple of different ways of building soldiers, but uniformly making them the same after it. It's also interesting that the First Order, and possibly the Empire as well, would take children and raise them as soldiers, which is not dissimilar to what the Jedi did,
Right.
They took children when they were young. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't take them, I guess.
We don't know exactly obtained them.
Yeah, the only thing we know is how Qui-Gon acquired Anakin and brought him back.
Right.
Yeah.
You get the impression that there's
a lot of children.
There's a similar...
They don't just take them. That's the difference between the light and the dark.
Can I bring one thing up real quick about the prequels? I'm sorry, and I'll keep it quick. Can someone explain to me why they purchased Anakin to take him with them? But they couldn't get his mom,
even though
a queen is there with them that could obviously pay for her. Check.
But they were out in the Outer Rim. Their Republic credits are no
good. We're not going to get her.
Well, this will never be done if we start bringing up prequel.
I'm sorry, Blaise, I'll keep it quick. So I just had to throw that out there. Go ahead.
Right. Because Qui-Gon's like the wind, baby. You can't. He's got things to do. He's got Jedi to train. He doesn't have
halves to be split into.
Right. Oh well. Yeah.
Oh well.
So, anyways, yeah. So there's a. It's interesting. So I think let's establish this. One of the cool things about the movie, clearly, is its roots in the prequels. So let's talk about Star Trek very briefly. Star Trek, J.J. Abrams reboot. In fact, reboots at all. They seem all about starting fresh, keeping only the coolest things, nods to the old stuff, and then just polishing things up. You know, whatever. Just dropping things if they have to. In Star Wars, what's really refreshing, and it took me like days after I saw the movie to realize, is this isn't a reboot. No. I mean, yes, it's fresh, it's new, it's different.
Even though we've seen stuff before.
But they've acknowledged the connections, and they've sort of allowed them to take root and blossom. They're trying to build stuff on it. Right, and I know people who love their EU are upset, but there's so much EU that it would be almost impossible to put it all in.
Correct.
It also doesn't, like, a lot of it seems to be coming in, and I wouldn't be surprised if even more than what we suspect is coming in, but you're going to have to do that fake out of we don't know yet.
You have to understand that, you know, the EU that you knew doesn't exist anymore. You know, it's now
it's
side stories.
Replaced by something.
But people have seen the creators of what's going on now have read it. They're fans, and there's stuff they like that is probably going to find its way into.
I feel like there's going to be a lot of side things. In fact, one of the things we're going to discuss is who we think these characters are, and I suspect that there might be a side way that they're bringing like a fan favorite back into.
I think I know where you're going to go with this, but yeah.
So let's, and just to wrap up that opening scene, as far as our villains for this, I think the First Order is very impressive. Phasma definitely did not get a chance to play in this film, but Kylo Ren, as an opening volley, just stopping that
laser blast
was so impressive that the fact that Poe had to look at it as he was passing it. Like, even he was like, what the hell is this? And that, to me, that was as powerful as, and this is going to sound weird, but as an establishing scene volley of the Empire storming Leia's ship
and Vader grabbing
that one guy and holding him, which seems like it's an odd thing that would be, why was that intimidating? But at the time, it was like, holy crap, that guy bodily lifted him off the ground.
We established the villain as his major threat right off the bat.
Well, now, here's the thing, though, and I'm trying to figure out whether that's more or less impressive for me as a fan of the old stuff. Because if you check out, the example of Darth Vader force holding the guy and choking
him. Just lifting him and holding him.
I mean, that's something that any Sith could do. You know, also choking the guy in the Imperial guy.
Yeah, choking him from across the room with his mind.
I mean, these are things that any Force user pretty much could do.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very impressive watching that because we didn't know that.
Right.
Well, now we watch this and see him stop a laser blast mid-flight.
Right.
Which is something we've never seen anyone do.
Right.
I don't think any of the video games or other expanded universe stuff even hinted somebody could do that.
Right. It's usually been deflections when I remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah, or pulling the gun directly out of somebody's hand.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that blew me away when I saw it. I was like, oh, wow, this guy is not to be messed with.
Yeah, I thought it was very impressive. I'm curious if...
As someone who had never seen Star Wars before, would they be the same amount of impressed as me?
Ah,
they see wow, crazy weirdness, this guy can do that.
Right, but
and I see, wow, crazy weirdness, all these other really powerful dudes I've known couldn't do that.
Right. It's interesting because, I don't know, I feel like lifting a person off the ground and choking them in reality would be very intimidating.
Right. Yes.
But in films nowadays, I don't think I'd flinch about that. Because I think any like action hero could probably get away with it, and you'd be like, "Oh, that's the heavy."
I mean, I guess.
So it's interesting that you'd have to like. There's this constant need to ratchet up the I'm intimidating.
I guess the realistic side to it, if you in contrast, is the take it as the other way around. If this wasn't a sci-fi movie, and your main character is shot at with a gun, and he pulls up his hand and stops the bullet right there, that's still pretty impressive.
That's more impressive
if it especially if it's not a sci-fi movie. Yeah. But that's like a rom-com.
But you know,
wow. Wow. First of all, who pulled a gun and took a shot in a rom-com?
There's a lot of questions in that one. Yeah.
But I mean, like, as a layman going in saying it, either way, it's impressive.
Yes.
I think the moment some guy does that, it becomes a sci-fi movie, if not fantasy.
So anyways,
no matter what you thought it was before.
So I feel like the opening really set for the scenes for the entire film, as a good opening should.
Agreed.
And from then on, I'm in love with this new cast. They're amazing.
Oh, yeah.
To the point where, like, I think I like their performances better than even the, like...
They got fantastic actors. They, I mean, and that's the thing. They got actors in this. It wasn't new people that, you know, were just green. These guys were established beforehand. Even if you didn't know them, they were established.
Right,
in other things.
And they knew their role. So...
Say that Liam Neeson isn't a great actor. Ewan McGregor isn't a great actor. They are. But, I mean, it's a question of tailoring the people to the roles.
Right.
And, frankly, giving them dialogue to work with.
Right. No, that's definitely true. And I also think a big part has to do with whether the actor wants to be in the project. Specifically,
I don't know. As an actor, I think it might be hard to say no to Star Wars, regardless of what it is.
Well, yes,
I mean,
but
look at Liam
wanting
Neeson
to be.
But again, I'm sure
there's a difference between, oh, I'd be crazy to pass this up, and oh my god,
yeah,
you just asked me to be Vice Pope.
Right. I think like it's maybe want is the bad term, but like wants it for the right reason.
Yeah.
So I fully expect that there are a lot of people who are like, well, this would make my career, yes, or this is a big budget thing, I have to do it. But then there are the people who are like, I love this.
Oddly,
I love
though,
this, and I have to do it.
Oddly, though, I can't remember exactly who it was, but there's a couple of them, of the new cast members, that I think it was Adam Driver, Kylo Ren, knew nothing about Star Wars.
I would not be surprised about that. Yeah, I would not be surprised. It feels like... I'm not sure what it is. All right, so let's quickly...
But what I think it is they fell in love with the script. They fell in love with this story.
I could see that.
Or
and also,
I
know
or the
that.
Promise of what was going to happen later, too.
I think it might be... like there's. I'm just remembering this early image of the cast all together. And them all being engaged, like old cast members, new cast members from this
Everybody's
movie.
Everybody's sitting together at that first table read, right?
And you've got filmmakers there who are professionals, who are apparently amazing to work with and for. I feel like that's got to be, for an actor, an amazing get. Plus, you've got the muscle of both Disney, which I love George Lucas, and I think he did an excellent job, and Lucasfilm does an excellent job. But when you've got a company that is just like this well-oiled machine that has the ability to flex, you don't got the one person who might overwhelm the filmmaking process.
Yeah.
So it'd be like, no, I think we need a cute little rambunctious kid in this role. And I'm going to just keep saying no until I see a kid that for whatever reason strikes my fancy, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Like, you've got a machine that was like, no, we know how to reach a bunch of actors, how to narrow down the actual filmmakers to real competent people. I feel like
We're open to new ideas.
Right, right.
You know, if they weren't open to new ideas, Captain Phasma still would have been a dude.
Right.
You know, Poe would have died in the X-Wing crash, or the TIE Fighter crash.
But there's also the idea of going back and looking at old ideas that were never used, hence the reason why we have BB-8, because that was an actual old-school prototype for R2-D2 back in the 70s.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Just they couldn't figure out how to make it work.
Oh, that's interesting.
Supreme Leader Snoke actually bears a strong resemblance to Ralph McQuarrie's original designs for the Emperor.
Really?
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Interesting. Actually, I think I saw a couple of Ralphs in the cantina scene. There seems like a couple of characters who look like they were like original either background characters or like early prototypes of characters that were floating around. And we know, like in Star Trek Rebels, a cartoon show that for those of you who haven't been watching it should watch it, has like one of their main characters, their Chewbacca stand-in, was an early design for Chewbacca.
Well, even on Jakku too. I mean, we had things in hoods that could have been Jawas that weren't, that could have been early prototypes also.
Right, right. So just going through that class.
How do you know they weren't Jawas?
They could have.
Face, actually. We actually saw the face and they weren't Jawas.
Maybe. Why? Because they don't look like a Jawa's face?
Yeah.
Do we know what a Jawa looks like?
Well, no,
we don't. It's just straight black with two Christmas lights for eyes.
Oh,
no.
There you go.
That's what it looks. That's what you could see from under the hood. Maybe that's what a Jawa looks like under the hood, huh?
They all look
you
like
don't
Yodas.
Know that now, do you? They are Yoda. Uh-huh. They all are Yoda.
Interesting. So we got Finn. Finn is an interesting character. We talked a little bit about him. I love the concept of a stormtrooper that... So what did you guys think of Finn, first of all? What did you actually think was going on with him throughout the film?
I got to take this and generalize some of... actually, the three newer characters that were introduced on the good guy side.
Okay.
It was okay for the ride, but I was kind of unhappy with the fact that we didn't have enough of their stories. Whereas in episode 4, we got to know who everybody was pretty much from the beginning.
Disagree completely.
Oh, no, absolutely. We got... Okay, the first movie did not end with us asking more questions about who our heroes were.
Mm-hmm.
This movie does.
I think this movie gave us more interesting backstories, the potential for more interesting backstories.
Right.
However, I think it gave us exactly the same amount. I think that gave us the same amount of backstory, but left room for more questions.
Right. Which wasn't a factor in the original. There were no questions afterwards about who these guys were. There are a lot of questions at the end of this movie about who our leads are.
No, I'm sorry. There were plenty of questions about Han Solo. What did he do?
There wasn't anything you need to know about him except the fact that he is a smuggler and a scoundrel.
In that case, I would compare him to Cameron Poe, right?
Poe Dameron.
Cameron Poe is a... What movie did he make?
He's a Nicolas Cage character.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Con Air.
Oh, my God. You're right. All right. All right. Everyone out there, please edit this movie to have more Nicolas Cage in it. Have the 20th Century Fox logo at the beginning and just... Nicolas Cage. All right. But yeah, so Poe, like we don't, like he, as far, he is what he is on the tin. He is a pilot for the Rebellion.
We are told that he is a great pilot. Yeah. I personally didn't see it.
Oh,
we are told Han Solo is a great smuggler. I never saw him smuggle crap.
Hold on.
He's not successfully.
We did see Poe be a better pilot than we saw Han Solo necessarily be a great smuggler.
And I told Peter at one point, listen, Lando Calrissian was a great pilot that flew the Millennium Falcon in the Death Star run of the second movie, yet no one said throughout any of the movies that Lando Calrissian is a great pilot.
Right.
That's because there was so much else that he did, and we were introduced to him in a different way.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, I honestly think that Poe's escape and Poe's raid on the Starkiller were probably the things that, to me, say you've earned, you're a great pilot.
Can I say
that? And it doesn't have to be the greatest pilot, although he could be bravado saying, I'm the greatest pilot that's ever lived. It's also like he is a daring spy.
Well, it's even told in the opening credits that
he's
Leia sends his best pilot, her best pilot out.
And I totally believe that is their best pilot.
I am prepared
because
to believe them.
The first
them.
Time we see him, he crashes a friggin' TIE fighter.
He successfully pilots it out of enemy territory, steals the ship that he's never flown before.
That was impressive. I will give him that. That is the only thing that would make me believe that, okay, like, this is worth a salt.
This is the first time he's ever seen a TIE fighter from the inside.
All right, geeks. All right. I'm going to say at very least they're comparable in backstory. Han and Poe.
I think so.
All right. So the next person on our list, we'll say Finn. I'm going to go. No, actually, we're going to go with Rey. I think Rey and Luke are very similar in the mysterious background, but now I have the Force. I think those two leave the movie at about the same amount of questions.
Two younger people that don't live with their biological parents that live on a desert planet.
Right.
Wanting more out of life.
Right. Yeah. And as far as just talking about what you're talking about, there's questions. I mean, sure, there are questions about who Rey's
like, who is she?
But there was the same. There was a lot of the same for Luke. We got the broad strokes, though, however, that Luke's father was a Jedi. So we don't know what Rey's parentage is. But I think also that's we are kind of geared up to question that, because no matter what, we've seen this movie after seeing a bunch of Star Wars movies, and now we are immediately like, well, what's your parentage? Which I kind of don't like, but whatever. So, all right, there's a so I'll give you, Ken, a little bit of points on that one where there is a little bit more questions for Rey.
Luke had the whole thing.
It could have been like, my father was a knight, and now I want to
be it was retconned, we had Luke's backstory. Your father was a Jedi knight. He was this. Right. He was that. This is where you come from. Uh-huh. We didn't get that here.
All right, and I'm going to go on. I think there's one for Pete's corner of the same amount of backstory, one for Ken's corner for there's much more questions left at the end of this movie. And then we got Finn. I'm going to go on the limb and say Finn is Leia, and that you get his background. Leia is a princess who wants to fight against evil, and she's not going to stand for it anymore. And Finn is a soldier who can't stand it anymore, and he's fighting back. They're the same. They have the same level of questions after the end. You could question, what's up with Leia? Why is she into this thing? And you could question, what's up with Finn? Where did he come from? Mm-hmm. Or you could be just like, no, that's all you're ever going to get about Finn. It's just that he was a soldier. And he doesn't. He was
stolen as a baby from his parents.
Right. And he's not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, you're looking for answers as to who his parents were. I don't think it's important.
I wouldn't say that. No, yeah, I don't say that.
Okay, then what else do you need? That is his whole backstory.
I think that's another one. I think we have what equal.
But what's important about him that made him go against his programming?
I think. So this brings it back to what I originally said.
I mean, if all the stormtroopers are the same and they're programmed and conditioned one way, what made him different to actually?
I got to throw a flag on this whole argument.
Okay.
Because your problem here is you're interested in the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's. If we erase the fact that it's a problem, you could just leave that as an open question. Does this movie leave you wanting to know more?
Were you
more
distracted
than the first
by
Star
all
Wars?
These questions throughout the whole movie? Did it prevent you from enjoying it?
A little bit.
Or is it something that's making you ask more questions after the movie and want to see more?
Well, I was asking myself those questions during the movie as things came to light.
Hmm. So okay. I do want to bring up Finn for a minute. So I do feel like this film, like it or not, does make you ask more questions afterwards. Although I think that's the viewer problem, which is a good problem to have.
Yeah.
To talk about Finn for a minute. So what did you think was going on with Finn as you watched it? When I first saw it, the whole time I'm questioning who the Force user may or may not be. We've all saw the clip or in the trailers, you see Finn with the lightsaber.
Right.
Somehow I got the impression that only Jedi can use lightsabers, which I think was a rule in an early Star Wars role-playing game.
I don't know why you cannot
use a lightsaber. Like, if you did, there's a 90% chance you will shoot your eye out or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember why, but I was like, oh, well, he's using it. So my head was like, he's clearly the Force user. A lot of people on the internet were talking about him being the Force user, and throughout the film I start questioning it, and ultimately at first I was like, he is Force aware and that's what Ren senses.
That's what
on
I
the planet
that's possible.
And then I was like, well, maybe he and Rey are, and then I landed on, actually, I'm still not sure that Finn isn't
right.
I think you might be right, and that may be the answer to your question of what made him special, that he resisted the Empire's programming.
Or I would even go as far as to say, because I'm very particular about this, he resisted, and that's what makes him.
Well, the only thing that prevents,
as opposed to the other way around,
the only thing that prevents that is the fact that Kylo Ren could sense Rey's potential before she even did. So why didn't he realize that within a stormtrooper that is around him.
Well, he may not have been around him all that much.
And before. He did notice something was wrong. And in fact, when one of the stormtroopers went missing, he knew which one it was. Maybe he didn't know what those feelings were, but he sensed there was something.
It's possible that
on.
The force within him did not really awaken until he saw his comrade killed.
No, but that too. But the fact that Kylo recognized that he wasn't firing on the group on Jakku in the beginning, too. So that's how he knew that it was Finn.
Yeah, I think there's
But that was after. That was still after his friend died.
Yes,
because he had the blood smudge.
Character. So I first of all, I love that there's so much to go into in the fiction. I see a lot of conversations online about this, and it's like they're pulling in a lot of theories. Like you build it up too much, and I'm not opposed to that. I just love it that the film itself. Like, just using the frames of the film itself, you're, like, questioning what each action
maybe
is.
Here's part of the reason why I'm worried about it. We saw the film. We have all these questions. It's J.J. Abrams. And my concern is it's going to be lost all over again. Because maybe the writers don't even know where they're going with all this yet.
I will say this. It seems as if Lost was a watershed moment, because few, if any, things are lost anymore.
Because, actually, wasn't the final scene where they shot Lost 2?
Was it?
I believe so.
No. No, Lost was shot at, in I forget, it was some tropical island. The last scene with Luke was Skellig Michael in Ireland.
Oh, yeah, no, that was definitely not the island of Lost. I just remember what you're talking about.
It's way too small, for one thing.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think, and I think there were too many hands in this. I don't think this was like a TV show that inexplicably became wonderful. It was, or popular. This is like Star Wars. You knew going into this that there are going to be people watching the sequel to the sequel. So I don't think you have to worry too much about that.
I mean, but the folks at these projects that Disney helms, you don't just toss out and make a movie. You don't make a project without knowing for sure where you're going to end. Secret War.
I'm gonna say this too, because the idea of Poe Dameron stating, you stated in the beginning, the original script, he died, and then they brought him, and then they decided to rewrite it and bring him back. But it's kind of, I mean, to me, it just seems like they didn't know where to go with him when they actually kept him alive.
It did seem that seemed more inexplicable than anything. I actually kind of expected to see lots of Poes. Like, I was like, oh, maybe he's
clones.
That would be cool.
I thought that would have been interesting, but it didn't actually work out that way.
Clone Dameron?
What? Yeah. So, all right, let's talk a little bit more about Finn and move on to another character.
Now, there's four clones. There's Poe Dameron, Dipsy Dameron, Lala Dameron.
Go
and
to
Fives.
Hell. Stop this. Five. I love how, like, young he is, Finn. I love how everything is new and exciting, and I'm your best friend now. We were awesome. We did so well.
You know what I like, too, is the fact that there was a lot more humor in this than in a lot of the other movies beforehand, and I like that Finn was one of those characters that provided a lot of that humor.
Yeah,
he speaks with a tone and an energy that I've never seen before in a Star Wars movie. And I think it's great.
Yeah,
he's anything, he's the audience surrogate.
Yes,
in many ways.
You know,
yeah,
he's part of the world, but in many ways he's coming out and experiencing the world for the first time.
Yes. Right, and his complicated morality, and all the characters have some level of this, especially in Star Wars, which is that he does like the most good thing he can possibly get away with doing. But like, if it's not going to work out, he's not good.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's sinister. It's just that
he's in it for himself.
He's exposed. He doesn't know.
In that respect, he's kind of the Han Solo character.
He's trying to survive.
When people say that the characters are one by one, one-to-one relations, they're not.
No, they're not.
They're all kind of pastiches of each other.
It's pretty easy to say that. It's tempting to say that.
Right.
Because it's easy to put them into those boxes, but if you dig a little bit past the surface, they are so much more nuanced.
So let's go into Rey. I feel like Rey is she's just a very. It was difficult to do this. It was difficult to put in a character frankly, that is a person of color in one lead role, a female character in another lead role. A lot of attention's being drawn onto the series. There's a very easy attempt to either give people exactly what they expected or wanted, or to do things that are innovative and different and take chances. And more importantly, it was a lot of chance of just getting like too many cooks, where the thing just comes out like this weird mash that nobody really liked. And this one just sort of, the way these characters work together just made this, like, it was perfect.
Can I go out on a limb here?
Sure.
Personally for me, Rey is probably one of the strongest female characters I've ever seen, if we're equating sci-fi even, above anything else, to Ripley in Aliens. I mean, exceptionally strong, very well put together. One of the strongest female leads I've seen.
Such
ever.
An honest. My point is, like, it's an honest character. Like,
yeah, no.
Like, you see her.
Brilliant.
Like, it makes perfect sense where she exists. The fact that she's like loyal to a family that she doesn't remember.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why would she want to go to Jakku so much? Go back to, like, what is she loyal to? What memories is she?
There's hope.
But
that's the biggest thing in the original trilogy. It's always about hope.
Right. She's almost an anti-Luke in that she just wants to go back home, as opposed to where Luke just wants to go out there and see what else is in the world. All the visuals of her being on her own are really powerful, amazing set pieces. And like, even scenes where she's running with Finn and I don't need you to hold my hand doesn't come off as like
catering.
It was written. It's funny. It's funny and makes sense. And it seems kind of ridiculous that Finn needs to hold her hand, but it's sort of like a childlike, almost like, or like if you're raised in a Stormtrooper Academy, like holding hands and running in sequence. But like it served a purpose out of the story, and it fit perfectly within the story. And that's true of her reaching out and using her force powers, her struggles with trying to figure out who she is, and her struggles even in that chair with Kylo, that scene, that silent scene of them like thinking hard at each other was really passionate. I mean, the actors in this film project are just amazing, and this character is just wonderful, just absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I know.
My God, we need to talk about Kylo Ren, but I just hit an epiphany, I think.
Really? All right, go
I
for
think
it.
There are a ton of plot holes in this movie, or seeming plot holes, that can be explained if Finn is force sensitive.
Really? All right, go for it.
Oh, the one that just hit me now, we've talked about a couple, but the one that just hit me now was when Poe is flying, leads the rescue, After the jungle planet, like when they swoop in over the water,
right?
And Finn looks up and says that's one hell of a pilot. He basically realizes it's Poe.
Oh, interesting.
How the hell does he know that? Unless he senses it.
That's interesting.
Through the Force, he recognizes him through the Force.
Right.
And it would be exactly, you know, how someone who doesn't know he's using the Force
would use it.
Uses it. It's just this instinctive, I know that guy. You know, kind of like Leia's, no, Luke's okay.
Right, right. Or even, like, his connection to Rey could also be the
that
Force.
Too.
It could just be, like, and I think their relationship, the relationship between Finn and Rey and Finn and Poe are both goddamn adorable.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. They're so good.
If anybody's listening, I would pay good money, to see a Finn and Poe buddy movie.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
That would be good.
We were awesome. We were great. You did wonderful.
High five.
Yeah.
God, just in the beginning, the why are you doing this? Because it's the right thing to do. You need a pilot.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
I need a pilot.
Yeah, it's and like a lot of these things, like the film is really masterfully done in that it both hits a lot of the things that it needs to hit. Like, it checks off those boxes that you need for a Star Wars movie, or for a movie that makes everyone happy, or for a project that, like, involves multi-billions of dollars. Right. And it also checks off all those boxes for being an amazing film. Like, it's actually well put together and produced.
Right.
So... I mean, I think we talked a little bit about Poe. He had the least amount of time in the film. I don't know if we could build up much more than saying he was a lot of fun.
Can we go to Kylo Ren?
Yeah, let's
please?
Do that.
Okay.
Can I? I'm going to say flat out, I love this character, especially as a villain. And personally, I think one of the strongest story arcs in the film.
Mm-hmm.
His character arc is just the best.
I think it was very good.
Because I was nervous. I was very concerned. I mean, seeing the action figures and everything else, and seeing this character that they're pitching as looking cool and everything, and all I could think back was Darth Maul in episode one, and this could go bad.
Right.
And I loved everything about Kylo Ren.
Oh. So I'm surprised to hear that, because a lot of people do have some... Like, the word most often used by people who don't like it, like him, is whiny.
But here's my thing. I see him as the potential of what Luke could have been if he was picked up by the Empire or the Dark Side early on. He was nothing more than a crazed adolescent boy.
So, yeah. All right. Let's discuss Kylo a little bit. There's one thing about him I don't like, which we will get to, but it's not the whininess. I love the concept of being torn apart by the light and the dark. And I love it that he is tempted by the light.
Yes.
It's the and it's not just like, let's flip the script and make it the other thing around. So the way I think of it is, imagine having, for whatever reason, you're a soldier, you have to do some horrible things, right? You've done things, you've hurt people, and you're in that stage where horrible, you've done such terrible things, you're conscious the good thing about you is actually causing you pain. The light is causing you pain. And he gets to the point where he wants to do something so horrific, so unforgivable, that he basically purges himself of anything good. So it's just dark left. That idea, to me, sounds both far-fetched and totally plausible in this world.
Absolutely.
It's amazing. And I feel like it's just... I hadn't expected it. I totally didn't expect this from that kind of character. So you take that person who's got the dark in them and they want to just do... And you know these people really exist. They do horrible things and they just can't seem to get themselves out of that loop.
Yeah.
Now add the fact that you have magical powers that connect you to every other living thing in existence.
Yep.
And that crushing despair is all the more presence. I could see why a little kid would go crazy being force sensitive. For the first time probably in ever, I'm like, God, I wouldn't want force powers.
Yeah.
I would not want to be connected to the force.
It's a weird burden.
Right.
I was impressed seeing, given that we've always been told that the Sith were about embracing the raw power of your emotions. But they were, from everything I've ever seen, they were always these very disciplined, calculating old people, or... very rarely, once in a while, Vader would bust into a rage by, like, screaming or something. But Kylo just flying off the wall.
I love that.
Raging with the lightsabers.
Twice, actually. Like, just destroying everything around him, because
he was throwing a tantrum.
He was an adolescent kid throwing a tantrum. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I just loved it.
Yeah, I thought it was a very impressive acting, and the voice. I love the way it sort of felt like it didn't come from the film. Like, it was just, it felt like it was piped in later, and it had a very creepy internal to your own head.
I have two things that I think I liked about the character of Kylo Ren and situations around him. One of them was the reveal of him having his grandfather's helmet. And the conversation that he's having at that time, where he's essentially begging his grandfather to help him.
Yeah.
He's like, help me extinguish this light in me.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like he's actually holding a real conversation, like he's actually talking to Vader. And in his head, Vader's talking to him, too.
I didn't really get that. I really felt it was more like a... a teenager's prayer. You know, haven't gone, maybe it's just haven't gone to Catholic school for so long, but it really felt like a teenager having a conversation with God, which is what he's elevated Darth Vader to. Yeah, and you can make an excuse that in that universe, Darth Vader is, you know, a demigod.
But just for me, the way I saw it or took it in, it almost sounded like he's been talking to him for a while, and it almost seems like Vader's been talking back to him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because it was such a specific conversation to have.
Yeah.
You know, looking for counsel, like he was expecting an answer from him.
Yeah.
You know?
It's the guide my heart kind of thing.
Maybe. The other thing
I really don't think he's coming back.
The other thing I did love was the contrast to him and Vader in the moment where Han approaches him on the bridge. And when he went to Kylo Ren and went, take that helmet off. You don't need it. And when you make the comparison to him and Vader, he's like, you're right. He doesn't need it. Vader needed it to survive, but he didn't. And it was like that weird little thing that kind of like, I kind of like that.
There is a lot to like about this
Han
character.
Han knowing Vader and then going to him is like, you don't need that.
Right. Yeah. And related is, we're going to branch out into other characters, but like, the fact that, so we get the final battle is ultimately between Ren and Rey and Finn, right? Yeah. So that last battle, I've heard lots of people complain about it. But there are, and what is the complaint? I think, Ken, maybe you have it.
I just had an issue that these people, you know, Finn and Rey, having no training whatsoever in the Force, just finding out that they may have something to do with it, could pick up a lightsaber and take on a guy that has been trained for years, and they did not cut down. They were not cut down or sliced down.
I don't buy it
that quick.
I don't buy Kylo Ren being trained for years.
Well, it was established.
He doesn't know what he's doing.
Luke trained him, and he had another master. He had two people teaching him in the Force.
I will say this. Here's my argument. A couple things. First of all, Chewbacca is important.
Chewbacca,
and he actually
is
important
too.
In this film.
Yes.
And one of the most important things he does is right after Ren kills Han Solo, he shoots him with a bowcaster, which we established also in this film is incredibly damaging. So, like, I think it's good filmmaking to show your big bad get handicapped before fighting the two rookies and basically not being able to hold... Well, holding his own, but not being able to defeat them soundly without question.
I think that scene right there with Chewbacca actually getting a shot in on Kylo Ren showed that he is still weak. There's still a chance that he's, you know, he could be redeemed because it wasn't stopped and it hurt him.
Well, it very and the
and
other
he's not
related
as powerful
thing
as he
is,
thinks he is.
He is definitely that. Yeah. I think not only is he not as powerful as he thinks he is, I will also throw out that he just killed his father. Like,
right.
That had effects on him, not just like my power levels are 100 times bigger. Like, it was stressful.
He didn't get through the quickening.
Which again shows that there is something that might still
People re-edit this movie, add Adrian Paul into it.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Adrian
but
Paul.
That, Ben, based on that too, that there's still a chance that there is something redeemable about him.
It's possible. But my thing is, I think the people who are complaining about this fighting, for one, they don't really see in the context of what the scenes were built up on. They put a lot of effort into making it so that it seems reasonable that he was standing, you know, not doing as well as he could have done. And the other thing is, and this is kind of like a theater perspective, it's from a filmmaking point of view, the prequel movies definitely had a wire fighting acrobatic kung fu Jedi at their prime.
I like
thing.
That there was a medium there.
And this one, I think it wasn't even a medium. Well, maybe. It was a little bit better, but it was the original trilogy stage fighting.
Right.
So the way I've been describing it to people, it's like going to a movie, and it's not like one is better than the other, it's just different. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you go to see a kung fu movie, and sometimes you see Shakespeare. And in Shakespeare, they don't need to be leaping off of every surface and doing major acrobatics.
I disagree, but they could go ahead.
But you could also just be on stage with your sword that serves a narrative purpose and not just like eye candy. And I think this film, like in many other ways, it's mirroring the original trilogies. And that the original trilogy, outside of all the in-universe explanation of whether or not that old style of Jedi fighting was completely made extinct, like out of in-universe, just in filmmaking, that's not the kind of story you're watching. You're watching one that's like the original trilogy, that's like a Shakespearean play. They're fathers and sons, probably brothers and cousins, or whatever.
We don't know.
Either. Brothers and sisters, we don't know.
Yeah, first of all, Frank, I think you desperately need to see Ang Lee's Coriolanus.
I would love for that to be a thing.
Wouldn't that be awesome? Second of all, though, I think you're absolutely right about that. It's the fighting was tailored to the movie in right. this, and it did a great job of telling the story through the fight. You know, using fight as another kind of dialogue.
Right.
See, yeah, I don't know. I kind of disagree. I mean, every one of these films, even including the prequels, had a build up so that we knew who the people were going to come down to in that last battle. I didn't get that personally. I didn't have that same feeling where it's like it culminated to this by the end of it.
I could give him that because it didn't seem like, imagine if Chewbacca didn't get a fire in anyways, or if there was no scene of like, hey, this Han guy is pretty cool. Like, why are they taking revenge on Kylo Ren exactly? Yeah. Like, it seems like Chewbacca should have been there punching the hell out of right. Kylo Ren. Like, he had the most invested in this. Although, I think they tried. Kylo Ren definitely was targeting Finn for being a traitor. And there's that force thing that connects Rey and
like I said, I just had
Ren.
A problem with the two leads picking up a lightsaber and almost automatically knowing how to use it.
Mm.
That was my biggest issue.
Yeah,
we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about other things like the original cast and how awesome they were. Maybe not. Mm-hmm.
Hey, you! Yeah, you! Are you going to be in or about the New York City metropolitan area? Well, have I got news for you! The Non-Pro Comedy Show is recorded live in front of a studio audience the first Thursday of every month in beautiful downtown Montclair, New Jersey. We have live comedians, which smell better than the dead ones, stupid giveaways via our crap raffle, and more geeky comedy than you deserve for a Thursday night. Just go to non-productive.com/show for more information.
All right, so now there are, of course, even more geeks with us. We've got James, we've got AJ, woo! We've got Matt, woo! And of course, woo! You've got the lovely Chewbacca.
You can't do that.
Everyone,
I can't.
This is the worst thing that has ever happened.
Not good.
All right, well, don't gargle beer as a way of doing Chewbacca's voice. So the next, I think... We need to talk about some other things in Star Wars. I actually kind of want to talk about one of my least favorite parts of the new movie. And please
be gentle with me.
It's the original cast. Some of that was not as great as the new cast, who are so vibrant and happy, and they're great actors, and they're great happy to be in their roles, and it's hopeful and all that.
I mean... You say that, but from like a actors having fun perspective, I'm not going to lie. I just recently watched Return of the Jedi. Harrison Ford is like walking through Return of the Jedi. He is not into it at all. Harrison Ford is way more into this movie than he is into Return of the Jedi.
I could definitely see that. In fact, just to be more clear as to what I don't like about the old cast, I specifically don't like... Han and Leia's relationship.
Mm.
All right. There's a couple reasons for it. One is I don't feel like I don't see the chemistry there, or even like the lack of chemistry, like the fact that they've sort of cooled on one another or not, that they're this old couple that have kind of gone through bickering and a bad period. Effectively, what I've said before is that these two people had a child that grew up to be a Nazi. They lost a child to reckless hate. And I don't get that in their performance at all. I get an info dump from Harrison Ford and about like, hey, that's the reason why I became a smuggler again and you went back to doing the thing you do. That's what happened to us. Yep. And it was just like, I don't know. I didn't like the info dump. I didn't like the lack of emotion. I understand it. 100% I understand it. I mean, you're not going to have, like, I've said it before, you can't have Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf in the middle of a Star Wars movie where you've got people who are weeping about their son that has passed or is now a monster.
Meanwhile, there's a Battlestar thing about to destroy the entire planet you're currently standing on.
Right. I get it. I totally do get it. But I just, to be blunt, it's a hard thing to put in this story. And I don't know if they did a great job.
I think it's tough. They only had the one scene to do it in. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, Han and Leia are together for what, 15, 10 minutes in the entire movie? Mm. So, as you said, it was kind of reserved for info dump time to kind of point out where the characters are going to be and go from there. I mean, maybe we'll see a little better exposition of, or a little better opportunities for both Luke and Leia, for Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher in the next movies, because they might have a little bit more prominent role as kind of being maybe the teachers to the specific characters, the kind of the way Harrison Ford got a lot of time to shine in this movie, though not with the older cast, right? So I liked Harrison Ford when he was kind of with the new cast, and their energy really affected him and made him really enjoyable to watch. And we didn't get that from Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford, because they only got to act together in one scene, which was pretty much just exposition.
Right.
But I get what you're saying. Like, yeah. I can't say I loved it either, but, like, I'm not, like, I'm forgiving of it.
All right. Well, I feel better getting that off my chest. A couple of the other returning characters that I think we could all talk about that I actually did enjoy a lot. I love Chewbacca in this film. I love that he had, like, agency, that he was able to do something. He got revenge for his friend. That was really cool.
And spoilers, I had a really, like, tough thought about Chewbacca the other day. Like, he shoots Kylo Ren, but, like, he obviously, like, babysat that kid. You know, like, that kid is as much his own kid as it is Han's kid.
I didn't even think
you know
of
what
that.
I mean? Like, he's been with Han all the time. So obviously he was still with Han when they were, you know, they were together. He was obviously helping raise that kid. So, like, that makes that even, like, more interesting and more intense.
Right. So,
yeah, it's pretty heavy stuff right there.
Yeah, I also, like, we're going to talk
about Chewbacca the nanny.
Oh, God, that is interesting. I just as a little throwback, and I don't know if there's anything in the production details that talk about this, but I feel like Chewbacca was shot in the shoulder at one point to give him a limp to make it easier for Peter Mayhew to actually portray Chewbacca. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but I'd like to think that the filmmakers were like that considerate.
I have no idea if that's true, but I totally thought that. Like, when I'm watching, like, Chewbacca run around and do stuff, I'm like, man, this is going to be tough on Peter Mayhew, because I know he, like, walks pretty much permanently with a cane.
Right.
So, like, yeah. I mean, I was really impressed by how much, like, he was just, you know, full heart in this movie, you know?
R2 in it was pretty static throughout, came back in a perfect moment. I think that's fine. I think it was cool, and I think it's also great for the actor inside. And C-3PO with the one random red arm. I'm so interested to find out more about that arm.
So I was reading that it's like Duracell was introducing this high-powered alkaline battery that is copper and red.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was just a play to that.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll come up with a more interesting origin for it in, like, the tie-in comics later on.
Yeah, because
Red arm.
He literally just comes on with his red arm. He says, I got to get this thing fixed. I'll get it fixed later. And then walks away. He doesn't explain how it happened.
Yeah, I do like how they have a prince. He does make fun of. He kind of slips and almost slips in a princess instead of a general. I think that was kind of cute.
That was cute.
Yeah, so I do find, like, a lot of the. I respect all the attempts to bring in original trilogy into this film. They did a great job. I feel like one thing was a little iffy, and there's actually a much worse thing that I'll maybe discuss at the end of the podcast. But there was a couple things, actually, that a couple other cameos and stuff from original cast members.
So there's a lot of neat little stuff, and not just from original cast members, from a lot of people. So Simon Pegg, we know is in the film somewhere as an alien, that we don't know which alien he plays in, right?
He's the guy who gives out the credits.
Is he the credit guy?
He's the junk dealer.
So Simon Pegg is the junk dealer. Daniel Craig is actually the stormtrooper that Daisy Ridley first uses her force powers on.
Favorite cameo of all time.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Not how they revived the dead when they were doing cameos.
No, not as cool. That was actually kind of creepy.
In the flashback scene, they use a two. They have two. Both of the actors who played Obi-Wan Kenobi make an appearance. Alec Guinness says Rey. It's actually they took him saying afraid in an old take from Star Wars right, and just Rey. Used the Rey part.
Right.
And then at the end, the whisper at the last line, the last whisper is actually
Ewan McGregor
yeah. doing his Obi-Wan impression. And then Frank Oz re-recorded his line from Empire Strikes Back as Yoda.
Yeah, apparently the both of them were very amiable and happy when they were contacted from the film. They were like, yeah, no, whatever it takes to make it better.
But the, oh man, yeah. Ahmed Best, man, he was really angry.
Jar Jar.
Oh.
Come on, guys.
Yeah. They brought in the original team of the people who created the chess set to remake the chess and refilm the stop animation and
left it exactly where it was at the end
exactly,
of that game.
Exactly. Right where it turns off in A New Hope is exactly where it picks up.
That means they really did not enjoy that game. They were like, we're never going to play this again. I have some games for the Dreamcast that are like that. Hey, topical? Who knows?
So that was cool. Yeah, I'm trying to think if there were any other cool, neat cameos.
While you think about that, I want to talk about another thing that I feel like some people have rightfully complained about. It's the number, it's the production design. In fact, specifically, how many new things, like vehicles, weapons, characters, or species that we saw in this film, or perhaps didn't see. Matt, you are a resident expert of all things Star Wars that goes boom. Is there anything in there that you'd like to talk about? Maybe not even things that are new, because there wasn't much new, but things that right. were like really like done differently and neat.
It was really cool to see the return of the X-Wing. I mean, it's the most like probably one of the most iconic ships in Star Wars. That along with the TIE Fighter. So, of course, they're going to bring those two ships back. It was really neat to see kind of how you can see sort of an evolution of the two ships. The TIE Fighter, you find there's like it's actually a two-person craft now, like during the escape with Poe and Finn.
Yeah, we got a lot more insight as to how the TIE Fighter works. Like, because you always just see it streak, pew, 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 and then blow up. Now we finally get to see a view from the inside, and it still blew up, but it's still neat to see it flying before it blew up.
Yeah, it makes it seem much more like a real vehicle now that we know that there are two people dying every time one of those things blows up.
Although,
and with the X-Wing, like you find they kind of had like sort of a Millennium Falcon-like little extra gun pod at the bottom that Poe uses at the beginning.
Which you never see them use again. Like, throughout the movie, they have people behind them at all times. Like,
well, I think that gun was mostly just to use against, like, anti-personnel. It wouldn't really do much against a ship.
But they managed to disable his X-Wing with small arms fire. You'd think he'd be able to at least spray and pray at the person tailing you trying to blow you up.
Well, that was like a dozen troops firing at one ship.
This is what I love when this happens in any Star Wars conversation, where the geeks come out and they theorize about the military strategy of a movie where it's like...
That's the one thing that's always annoyed me about the X-Wing, and that the TIE Fighter definitely has on it, is that there's no way to defend an attack from the rear, which is where they're always being attacked.
Well, that's what a good astromech is for, hey. I'm sorry.
But actually, one thing that I want to add on, something that was brought up to my attention, where like it's always kind of weird how this like very advanced futuristic society, they fly and fight like it's World War I, World War II air combat. Where it's very close quarters, like guns, no missiles, no fancy computers to like lock on to people, and you could actually see it in the movie. Like where they kind of bring back like the targeting display with the Millennium Falcon, but also when it shows the TIE Fighter and the X-Wing, they look sort of similar.
Yeah, it's using the same
and usually
targeting
when they
software.
Show it, it's like you can tell the frustration of the pilot trying to actually hit whatever target it is. So I think I like that it was kind of a small, kind of like lampshade on why they have to do all this very old style air combat is because their computers suck. No one can really aim. No one can really shoot. It's all like, but it's also like one of the many weird things about Star Wars is how static technology is through like almost over a century.
That is interesting, and I want to resist the urge to try to come up with in-universe explanations for it. Like, well, when you have a religious order that controlled the world for years, they of course dominated science and pushed it. Like, none of that. It's just cool. It looks good, and it's a nice aesthetic.
Cool. It's neat. It's cool looking, but still, they have enough time to design and build a bigger version of the Death Star, but they can't, you know, design an astromech specifically for a shuttle that will specifically shoot at other things shooting at you.
Well, that segues nicely into whether or not any of these advancements in the film, whether it be the Starkiller base or, let's say, the lightsaber battles, are they, what do you guys think of them? Are they better than they were in previous versions? What terrible opinions do you have?
I mean, I can't help but be a little disappointed with the vehicles in the film. It's not that, like, I didn't like what we saw, but the vehicles were definitely used as a way to bring us into the familiar. We had the Millennium Falcon, we had the X-Wings, we had the, you know,
the that was broken.
Yeah, the broken Walker, the, you know. But when I think back on Star Wars, I can think of, at least from the original trilogy, I can think of like a couple of big vehicles from every film that I think of as like iconic. And I really don't know if I'm walking away with one from this film, which is okay, you know, but it's just like that's something that's cool.
You're not going to buy the Lego set?
I mean, I will, because actually, I want the Millennium the Falcon again.
Hold on. That's a good question. What would be the Lego set? I mean, if we're assuming that they're not going to just repackage an older thing we've already seen.
Well, now you've got the red X-Wing, which is very big, and they've already made a Lego set for it.
Okay.
So different colored X-Wing.
Yeah, different colored X-Wing.
Slightly different designed. Yeah. Slightly different design. More akin to Ralph McQuarrie's original art.
It's weird, because I'm okay with the Stormtrooper updates and a few other design updates, but when it comes to the vehicles, I'm disappointed that there wasn't something new and cool that was actually new and not just an update. Because the only thing I could think of was like a huge Starkiller base, or...
I mean, Ray Speeder's new.
Ray Speeder. Okay, but Matt, you said there were a couple?
I mean, yeah, I was going to bring up Ray Speeder. But also, though, it's a new Star Destroyer design. It looks pretty different than what it was in the past.
It's definitely bigger,
kind of like the Imperial shuttle that Kylo Ren uses when he first lands in the beginning of the film.
I thought that shuttle was lame.
No, I've heard. I think it's pretty cool.
It's just a much bigger version of the old.
Yeah, it just kind of looks like a big. The only thing I liked about it was how it kind of just looked like, for some reason, the wings were able to extend seamlessly without any sort of connection,
so
which
you're
was cool.
A Lamborghini guy.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
Gullwing to the rescue.
Let's move on to the I'm talking about the story beats. So personally, I feel like arguing that, well, this is just A New Hope, the plot of let's go to the evil base and disable it before it could destroy us all. I don't think that is a good argument because of the nature of this film and what the story beats do, and how like it brings, like, this is, we make a big deal that Star Wars is like the hero's journey. It's an archetypal tale. It's a nice classic arc and story. I don't think it's a problem that it borrows those tropes. In my personal opinion, I don't know if you guys agree or not.
Well, I mean, the original New Hope was pretty much slinging together two other series. Was it Flash Gordon? And then what was the other one that Flash Gordon essentially stole from? There was the original series.
Buck Rogers is maybe?
That's it, yeah. So like Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers were essentially Star Wars. Where before that, like, I was reading something where everything was more akin to Star Trek, in that it was more cerebral to have science fiction, whereas Star Wars kind of helped bring in action sci-fi.
Yeah, it brought back the fantasy sci-fi from like the 30s and so. But there is a difference between saying, hey, this is very pop sci-fi fantasy, and no, our heroes are turning off the shields and destroying the base before it can destroy us, and it destroys one target and we're worried about it destroying the other target. Like, there are definite story beats that are the same.
I mean, it didn't bother me. It was different enough, you know what I mean? Like, that's I think what they set out here to do, right? The story should tread enough familiar ground to feel like we're going back to Star Wars.
Yeah,
you know?
I feel like it's not stealing or copying. It's more for symmetry's sake, for bringing you back to the beginning, because this is a new beginning for our characters. You know, like, Like, it's not just a bigger, badder Death Star, even though technically it is. I mean, like, we still have the mentor figure dying.
Right. There's a lot of elements that are similar.
Like,
right.
Like that's definitely the... Han was definitely
orphan
the
Orphan on a
Obi-Wan.
Desert planet.
Yeah.
Right. The same lightsaber.
In, yeah. Same lightsaber. Orphan on another planet that happens to be a desert.
Right.
But we had new stuff, too. The idea of Finn, right, is... definitely distinctly new.
Right.
Absolutely.
I would
argue that see the perspective we kind of got on Kylo Ren's struggle, I think is
new. Yeah.
I don't want to say distinctly new. I think it was the struggle that George would have loved for us to see in the prequels but couldn't
Anakin,
really get
yeah,
out. You know, but I think it was distinctly new in that it was well done. You know, there was definitely enough stuff new there that I wasn't like, oh, man, I'm bored. I'm watching the same thing over again. Or I feel like I'm being pandered to.
I feel like it. Obviously, there's symmetry, like I said. But each aspect of that symmetry is new and unique to the story. I feel like it was just done to make it seem like familiar ground, to make it feel acceptable to the Star Wars community, which is a very harsh community.
Well, maybe, yeah.
And help us ease into the transition of these new characters in the new arc.
Right.
And, I mean, I feel like what this movie did, which did not really happen before, is that I feel like everything was distinctly black and white before, really. Like, you were either black or white, and like, you know, Darth Vader was black up until the very end, and then he jumped full white.
So you were all racist.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas
well, yeah,
in this one, I'm not saying there's gray.
The very end.
Like, I'm not saying that there's shades of gray, because it's still very distinctly black and white, but it swirls them better. Like, people
right.
fall in and out, kind of, you know, where, you know, like you were saying, Kylo Ren struggle to, he wants to be on the light side, but, you know, it's his duty to stay on the dark side, things of that nature.
I find that struggle fascinating. I think we talked a lot about it on our fan club, which is facebook.com/group/nonpro. You should join it and comment along with the rest of us because we only have a few minutes left. But yes, James.
There's definitely one thing I want to talk about that I thought was super cool from the production of the film that I really wanted to go over. So
lightsaber battles.
Okay, sure.
No. What were you going
to
talk about?
Well, no,
about?
I wanted to talk about him. I really liked one of my favorite characters was Poe Dameron, Oscar Isaac.
Okay.
So those of you who don't know, Oscar Isaac was kind of just asked to be in that opening act, right? He had only signed for the beginning of the film. He was going to actually die in the crash of the TIE Fighter.
I've heard about this, yeah.
But JJ ended up really enjoying working with him. He had just gotten back to New York after leaving the desert they had filmed in, and JJ calls him up and says, you know what? You're in the rest of the film. I'll figure it out later, you know?
I've heard a lot of people using that as a complaint.
Really?
And I can understand why, because it did feel weird to me. I was like, how did he survive this? Where was he thrown from?
Apparently
out of his jacket?
Apparently they did shoot some extra stuff.
Uh-huh.
He takes off the jacket when he goes
jacket.
Into the TIE Fighter.
Oh,
but they had filmed some extra stuff, but they cut it for time. Because the focus in this story really was on Finn
right.
and Rey and... It felt off, they said,
you know,
when they kept it in.
Realizing he took off his jacket does make me feel a lot better. But, I think even regardless of that, the joy that those characters have in being reunited, the bromanship, is just one of the wonderfully delightful things that this movie is full of. And there's so many moments where it's just fun. Fun!
I feel like was also missing from literally every other Star Wars movie because there was always like kind of a conflict in the original trilogy with Han and Luke. And then, yeah, it was kind of like, oh, you're my friend in the original, where that was an honest relationship that you could really love.
Right. And I do feel like Kylo Ren, and we talked about it a little bit. We talked more about it on the fan club. I think whiny isn't the proper term for him. I think he has the most justifiable issues that I've ever heard of a villain character have.
He is not upset that he's not going to Tashi Station, guys. Yes. He, like, legitimately
exactly.
has just been asked to kill his father. Like,
yeah.
that would obviously give me pause.
And there are elements about this that are fascinating. The idea that, like, you can do horrible things and being good is actually part of the pain of living. When you're, like, if you've got a little bit of a conscience, that hurts you. So doing even more horrible things or ultimately unforgivable thing is a way of relieving that tension with yourself. I think as far as the lightsaber battles, and we've talked about this on the group as well, like, it's perfectly tuned for Shakespearean drama. I love the prequel fights. They're beautiful. They're fun. They're exciting. I don't know how many of them are significant. I think maybe one. I think Obi-Wan and Anakin are kind of cool. That has significance to it. But I want there to be dialogue when my people are fighting each other with light laser swords. I want there to be some sort of like passion there. And I, for me, the movie hits it. I don't know if you guys are in agreement with that or...
Battle of the Clones. Yoda. Absolute favorite. In the entire series. Just really? Gonna say that.
Yeah. Really?
The Yoda fight, yeah, it's my favorite.
Oh my
just
gosh.
When he drops the can and he, you know, he force grabs.
That's awful.
The
that fight is terrible.
That's funny, but I don't know if I like it.
So,
probably because it's funny, it's my favorite. Go ahead.
I think what I like about the fights in the new Star, they're just so visceral. They're so. And it's the same way kind of in the original series. You know what I mean? The fights in the. The prequels are artistic, choreographed, you know, but in these movies, they're fighting.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean?
And there's the other difference is that people in those movies.
Oh, no. Go on.
Were
trained.
Were trained.
I
mean, none of these people. I mean, this is a bare knuckle brawl for survival at the end of this movie. They have a laser sword.
I mean, what am I doing with it?
And you can see it's part of their personality, the way they fight with it. Like Finn swings it like a bat. It has no weight to it. Swinging it that way won't help in any way, shape, or form. But that's how he knows how to swing, and he's using what he got.
And you saw the other weapon that the stormtroopers use. They are heavy like
that.
They
are they're trained to fight with the shock baton.
Right.
Whereas
which is probably why he got his poop handed to him.
Rey fights like it's like she's fencing. She repeatedly lunges. She just lunges. It's a light weapon. She just has to poke him to kill him.
She also
and
holds
all she
it,
does. She holds it
in low like she holds her staff too.
Yeah.
Matt, am I hearing you trying to say something?
I'm sorry.
Come in.
Man, I've tried to say stuff like the past half an hour.
All right, say something then quickly. You whining Ren wannabe. I don't know what I'm doing.
I was just going to go on from what AJ was talking about in the different styles and how, like I've said this on the HQ, but Ren, I felt like he was clearly not trained properly and not fully experienced, but he kept on trying to fight like he was like the style in the prequels. He would do the same flourish whenever he would attack, like the same saber spin, kind of like he was spamming the same move because that's what he knew. And when that doesn't work, he would just... She would try to be fancy, but in the end would just end up trying to brute force it because he's not fully trained. He's not a full on Jedi or Sith or whatever. And it was just honestly really neat to kind of see like three different fighting styles in one fight and kind of telling its own story of like these three different personalities just speaking through battle.
Yeah, and I definitely think that their battles do reflect the personalities both of the characters in the film and of the film itself. There's a lot to like about this movie, and honestly, we could probably talk about this for another hour or two, but we're running out of time. If you'd like to join us in this conversation, we're probably going to keep having it online for the next, 16-18 months before the next movie comes out?
We've got like 18 months.
All right, so yes, join us online, non-productive.com. You could... fight us if we're wrong or celebrate us if we're right. The important thing is, happy life day, everyone.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.